All right, so as we predicted at the start of the 2021 season, Kevin Park, we are getting set for a series between the Boston Red Sox and the Toronto Blue Jays. Starts tomorrow. And first place in the American League East is on the line. Something we talked about right out the gate. I remember telling you that the Boston Red Sox were a team to be taken seriously. I remember saying that specifically to you. And I have been proven right so far.
How many wins did you say the Blue Jays were going to end up with?
Well, 83 to 88.
88? Wow, no kidding.
Gave myself a little wiggle room there. Right. Gave myself a little wiggle room. The Blue Jays have today off after winning their weekend series against the Philadelphia Phillies. Phillies aren't very good.
No.
Not taking anything away from the Jays. They were 22 and 15, by the way.
You beat bad teams. That's what good teams do.
Well, we talked about this a little bit off air. And I think we can now assume that the American League East, that there's some separation here. There are four teams that are pretty good in the American League East. I don't want to get into ranking them. But the Rays, I'm going to include. I'm going to include the Rays in that group. The Red Sox, the Jays, the Yankees, and the Rays, and then there's Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be tight all season. I think we can probably say that. So I think it's hugely important, Kevin, that the Blue Jays are 9-2 in interleague play, because we know that those pitching-rich teams in the National League East, we assume they're going to be better. You know, the Jays got the Phillies at a point in time where they're not playing very well. They're not hitting much. They got the Atlanta Braves. Freddie Freeman was scuffling. Acuna was out for a bit.
Yeah.
Their pitching's banged up. So they've already played 11 games against the National League East. They are 9-2. They have taken advantage of that situation. I truly believe that at the end of this season, when we sit down and look at the standings, and if the Jays are in a playoff spot, we are going to look at interleague games and say that had a huge, huge say in this. And it's important because in those 11 interleague games, and that's 11 games where we haven't seen the Blue Jays at their full strength either. George Springer's been out.
Yeah.
The bullpen is, I mean, every day somebody goes on the DL, somebody else comes in, and it just happens. It's a revolving door. So I think the 9-2 record is really, really significant, because they got a bunch of games against the Orioles. And if they can play 750 against the Orioles, if they can own the Orioles, like if you look at the schedule and work it out, there really is a path forward for this team.
Yeah, well, they got six games still with Seattle. They got six with Detroit against Detroit. They got 19 against the Orioles. They got obviously, what is it? They got nine more in the National League East. Who they have to play the Marlins and the Mets. You know, the Mets got pretty good pitching, especially if they get Jacob DeGrom back. Offensively, they're a solid offensive team. You know, you get Lindor rolling.
And the Marlins pitch. The Marlins pitch every game.
And the Marlins are young and don't know any better. Yeah. Offensively, that, you know, when they're hitting, they're just, it's get it down, get it singing kind of thing. I'm with you. If you look at the Blue Jays are this year, unlike a lot of years that I've watched them play anyway and tried to do this job, is it's more about them than it is the team they're playing. If they get halfway decent starting pitching, they're going to win most of those games. The starting pitch don't have to be great. Mm-hmm. Halfway decent starting pitching. We saw Anthony Kay. He went four innings. That's all they have to do is give themselves a halfway decent chance to score some runs late. The lineup is so relentless. Is relentless a good word to use for this lineup?
Yes.
I could say that.
No, it is.
Yeah, with Vladdy being Vladdy that we all thought Vladdy could be. Bo, look, I don't know what the sky is on Bo, but it's high.
See, I keep thinking back to what Dusty Baker said after after one of the games the Astros played the Jays. And he was talking about how the Jays can put together rallies, can string together hits, can put together big offensive innings so quickly that it really you've got to be on top of things if you're the manager. It makes it hard for you to get your bullpen in because we're talking a matter of, you know, of 12 pitches. We're talking a matter of 12 pitches, and the Jays can really turn an inning around.
Yeah, no, when Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is not hitting at the bottom lineup is not the hardest to pitch to. Poor little Danny Jansen looks like he's lost at the plate a lot of the times. Now, occasionally he'll run into one, which is, I guess that's all you can hope for, is he hits a three-run homer once a week. That's what he's going to do offensively probably all year. He's not going anywhere. They don't really have anybody else. And pitching to Ryu or catching Ryu is not the easiest thing to do, and he seems like the only guy that can do it. Their lineup is not balanced. You know, if you get a pitcher that, like Nola was basically hard in, soft away with the changeup. He didn't really have to change anything up, meaning, you know, giving an example is the Astros. The Astros, you could picture what they're running out there offensively. Righty, lefty, righty, lefty, righty, lefty. Mm-hmm. Righty, you have to pitch down. Lefty, you have to elevate. Righty, you have to pitch in, elevated, and spin it. Point being is that pitcher has to do something differently to every guy hitting. With the Blue Jays lineup, if you can locate a little bit in with something hard and expand it and pitch around certain guys in the order, and then have that fed off the changeup down and away and maybe sprinkle one occasionally, you don't need three or four pitches. You could do it with two pitches. That's the point. But it's having that guy that has enough command to do that on the inner half, and his misses have to be real good, and obviously he can't let the two guys in the middle of the order beat you. Now, getting George Springer back will do tremendous things to this lineup, and that brings up another question.
Well, we got to talk about that. I threw out on social media, 590 is the text line. And let's remind you of Blair's rule, right, that we will see George Springer. When we see George Springer standing at the plate, then that's when I will – that's when I'll know he's ready. I'm not, whatever Charlie, Ross, anybody says, doesn't matter to me. Until I see him standing at the plate, I'm just going to assume that, you know, that he's day to day. And then once he finishes a game, I'm going to wait and see if he plays another game. Having said all that, Marcus Semien is on a roll. What are we talking about?
Well, last 15 games, he's hitting .361. He's had 11 extra base hits. He's had 13 RBIs. His on-base percentage is .400. His slugging percentage is .672.
Did you see, by the way, as we were talking, we have MLB Network on in here. Did you see their little graphic they put up?
Vladdy and Bo.
No. Potential free agent shortstops at the end of this year.
Yeah.
They classified Marcus Semien as a potential free agent shortstop because that's what he's played until this year.
Yep.
Since the 2019 season, and including this season, he's got the highest WAR. Trevor Story, Carlos Correa, Corey Seager, him, all those, Javier Baez, that class of free agent shortstops we talk about going in the offseason. Now, okay, admittedly, a lot of that comes from 2019 when he had a terrific year. But my point is, If Marcus Semien is a little bit like the 2019 Marcus Semien, Kevin, and you got George Springer coming back, if you were Charlie Montoyo, you're sitting there, I think as soon as George Springer comes back, you move him into the leadoff spot. I think you have to. I think you're obligated to do it. I understand, and you know, we talked off air. You said, well, if Marcus Semien keeps us going, how do you go about interrupting that in order to get George Springer, get George Springer in the lineup? I just think with all due respect to Marcus Semien, when I give a guy a contract for 6 years, George Springer's going to be the guy here.
Yeah, and George in the leadoff spots had 138 career home runs with 355 yes. RBIs. But I wanted to throw this little stat at you real quick. You know, there's four players in baseball that have 9+ homers and 7+ stolen bases. Two of those are on the Blue Jays team. You want to name the two? 9+ homers and 7+ stolen bases.
God.
Two of them play for the Blue Jays.
Oh, boy. Teoscar and Semien. It's not Bo.
Yeah.
Bo's got 7 steals?
Marcus Semien, Bo Bichette.
Bo's got 7 stolen bases?
He sure does.
All right.
9 homers and 7 stolen bases. That's
a top of your order.
If you're Marcus Semien,
Right.
Why have you gotten off to the last 15 games? Why have you turned it around and started hitting balls to right center field? You know, you got the cheap home run to right field. You know, that park's a little bit of a joke when the wind's blowing out to right field. It's not his fault. But that's a little bit of a, that home run. All the other ones he's hit are for real. Most of those would have been out in any other parks. Why does he have these stats? Probably a couple of reasons why that is, I would think. Yeah, he's been there and done it before. He's got a really slow heartbeat. He got off to a slow start, which didn't really bother him. You could tell in his Zoom calls when people were asking him the questions. I'll turn it around. I understand what kind of hitter I am. I understand what I need to do, where I need to try and hit the ball, what I'm looking for in the strike zone to barrel up baseball consistently. And then you put him in the leadoff spot. And if you think about if you're an opposing manager or an opposing pitcher, and you're standing over there, and say you're getting a 2-0-3-1 count, you really going to flip him a breaking ball? Or are you going to come after him with something straight? Now, that straight could be a changeup.
Mm-hmm.
That straight could be a sinker in, which is what they're trying to do to him. They're trying to get him to chase something in off the plate to get him out of way. And why they're not spinning him more baseballs will make you scratch your head a little bit until you look over on the on-deck circle. And that's why I said that stat about the 9-plus homers and the 7-plus stolen bases. If the guy standing on the on-deck circle, it's not going to get him probably a different pitch mix, but it will get him strikes on the plate. So if you're Marcus Semien, would you rather be hitting leadoff with the guy standing on the on-deck circle, or would you rather be hitting sixth with Lourdes Gurriel Jr. hitting behind you? That's the difference.
And I got to throw this out there, too. I think that Randall Grichuk has done enough now that you have to consider Randall Grichuk when you start performing surgery in your batting order.
Yeah, 30 RBIs. Right? That's
you've
not
got. I mean, you don't just sit there and say, "Well, Randall, we're going to knock you down to whatever."
Yeah,
seven.
And Randall has said out loud that he likes hitting behind Teoscar because him and Teoscar being pitched. The same way.
I will tell you, I do not. And this is where I kind of feel for Marcus Semien. I don't want to touch Vladdy, Teoscar, and Randall right now. I want to leave those three there.
Or Bo. So four guys. I ain't messing with Bo. Bo and Vladdy.
I'm sorry. Okay. You know, yeah, I was thinking. I was thinking of where do you put Semien? So I wasn't including Bo because Semien's not going to hit second. So I wasn't including Bo. But what I'm saying is, I hate to say it, but Marcus Semien for me might have to hit out of the seventh spot. Or the sixth spot, right?
Or you could go
Springer, Bo, Vladdy, Teoscar, Grichuk, and then Springer.
Okay,
who
leads baseball in runs scored? That's Bo Bichette, or he's tied with 33 with a couple of guys. Would you move him down to the three spot? Put Marcus Semien in the two spot. Put George Springer in the leadoff spot.
You want
to maximize Marcus Semien. Are you going to maximize him offensively, putting him down in the sixth spot with a guy standing on the on-deck circle? Again, these pitchers are so geared up to punch you out that it's really not about when they're going to throw you in a certain – they're still going to try and get him out with what they're going to try and get him out with. But it's getting him strikes, getting him something that he can hit a ball as hard as he can possibly hit it in a certain count, in a certain location. Can he do that hitting in the sixth spot? Is he a good enough hitter to do that's my point, with somebody else standing on the on-deck circle that's not Bo Bichette? That's my point. And would Bo be okay moving down to the three spot? And would Vladdy be okay moving down to the four spot? I don't know how that messes up routines for those two guys, because routine's a big deal, especially a young guy. They're confident hitting second and third, and they're having a lot of success doing it.
My thought with this is, knowing how the Blue Jays have, knowing how they've kind of treated Bo for the past couple of years, again, knowing they have George Springer signed up for a long period of time, knowing that Marcus Semien is just here on a one-year contract, I think you go Semien, Bichette, and I think you move Semien down, or Springer, Bichette, and move Semien down.
I'm sure that's what they'll do.
Yeah, I don't think it'd be. And the other side of this too, Kevin, is you know this as well as anybody. There's the idea that, okay, if we have to make a change, let's do it in a manner that interrupts stuff in the least possible way, right? So Springer comes back, He goes where Semien is. Semien goes down into the sixth spot. Okay, that's one move, bringing a guy in, moving a guy down. Now if you start bringing a guy in and moving this guy down and then moving this guy down and moving this guy over here and put...
Yeah.
Most, even in this day and age of analytics, the idea is you try to be least disruptive as possible, especially if the lineup is...
And you have told Teoscar that he is your cleanup hitter. He has a lot of confidence doing that. He has a lot of confidence in his manager and his organization that they're going to stick with him and give him a chance to be the cleanup hitter for the Toronto Blue Jays. But
it is strange, though, isn't it? When you consider how often the past 2 years we used to come in here and just bang our heads because of Charlie's lineups. This guy was moving down, and you know, and this guy was moving up, and this guy was DHing and all that. Mm-hmm. Now you're starting to see some consistency, but you don't have the big dog in your lineup.
Yeah.
It is funny how that works out.
Yeah, and how do you put the big dog, quote-unquote, because there's a couple of big dogs already there that you could yell and scream that's there's a big dog, too.
There's only one big dog who's here for 6 years.
I guess. Yeah.
He's the biggest of the big dogs.
Yes, yeah. When it comes to wallet size,
He's the biggest of the big dogs.
But how do you lengthen your lineup with your best guys? That's what you got to ask yourself and maximize. And would the three guys in the middle of the order be okay moving down a spot? That'd be interesting to see how it works out. It's a good problem to have. The only thing that means is one of the guys is hitting really well, and you want to keep him somewhere around where he's hitting well. That's all that means.
590-590 is the text line. We will get to it. We have a lot to talk about today after that weekend. The Jays have tonight off. They'll start a three-game series against the Boston Red Sox tomorrow. We're going to talk about Vladdy. First time he's homered in three consecutive games.
Won't be the last time.
Yeah, definitely won't be the last time. We want to talk about the Jays pitching. Anthony Kaye in particular. Jordan Romano. What we've seen out of Jordan Romano, including that kind of puzzling finishing off an inning with a 101 mile an hour fastball and walking a guy in two sliders, which was interesting, shall we say. So we have a lot to talk about. Ben Wagner spent the weekend around the Blue Jays. He is one of our Blue Jays voices on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet. Ben Wagner joins us next. This is Baseball Central. All right, you can text us at 590-590. We're almost at the quarter pole for the Toronto Blue Jays. A lot of teams are already there or past it. And we're asking you, what would you do with Marcus Semien once George Springer comes back? We're asking you who your biggest surprises are, your biggest disappointments. You got any touts coming up? You got anything you think are going to happen that we haven't seen yet? 590-590 is the text line. Question for you, Kevin, from Ryan in Victoria on a broader issue. And the reason I ask this is this was a discussion that Barker and I were having the other day, because it seems to me that the phrase ambushing fastballs,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people are using it and they don't understand what the hell it means. I avoid using it because I'm not entirely certain what it means.
Nobody ambushes a fastball.
So bingo. All right. So here we go.
Nobody.
Questions for Barker. What's the difference between guessing at the plate, thinking along with the pitcher, and ambushing? To me, they're all guessing, just with different results. Guessing wrong, thinking along, waiting, and guessing right, and ambushing, guessing right on the first pitch. Here, Ryan and Victoria.
Baseball's changed. Hitting's changed since I played. When I played, it was you look for something straight to give yourself the best chance consistently over and over and over again to put yourself in the most athletic position hitting that you possibly can. Me going up guessing on a third pitch breaking ball is not the way you're going to do that. It is one of those things where this is your thought process. Now it's different for every hitter, but for most hitters that are really good, they do it this way. They look for the highest velocity that guy's possibly got. Okay, I'll give you an example. Jordan Romano throws his slider 52% of the time. They're hitting less than 200 off his slider. Why in anybody's name would I walk up and look slider off of Jordan Romano? Most people can't hit it. Why do I think I'm going to go up and hit it? But I can go up and give myself the best chance to get a hanging slider if I look velocity put my front foot in the most athletic, on-time position that I possibly can so I can recognize spin right out of that guy's hand that will tell me, is that a strike or is that a hanger? And if it's a hanger, because I'm in that athletic position, then I can drive down and through the baseball, hit the bottom part of that ball, get backspin, and maybe go back leg city, give myself a chance. So I hope I answered that question the best way I could. Guessing is no good a lot of the times. Looking fastball, for me, 100% of the time, is the way I think because of velocity in 2021.
So when I say ambushing, he ambushed that pitch. What does that mean?
Ambushing for me occasionally would be, okay, a left-handed pitcher that you face and you're a right-handed hitter who you've noticed to the five right-handed hitters in front of you, he's flipped a first pitch breaking ball. I might go up and still think fastball, but I'm looking for that get me over breaking ball to ambush. Is that? Makes sense. You can, ambushing a fastball is just say that to yourself. Does that even make sense? No, because these guys throw 1,000 miles an hour. How am I ambushing a fastball? And most guys on the planet throw fastballs more than they do secondary pitches. So you're not ambushing a fastball. You go up having a great mindset on something that guy throws the hardest. I gave the example for Jordan Romano. I hope that helps and makes a little bit of sense.
I think it does.
Okay.
Let's bring in Ben Wagner of our Blue Jays voices on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So, Mr. Wagner, because this is just something we have to do every day, regardless of who's on, give us an injury update because somebody's got to gotten hurt today, even though they're not playing, right?
I hope it's a lingering injury from athletic activity on the baseball field and not the beach or the golf course today. Let's at least hope that. But unfortunately, we spend another off day worrying about a potential roster move after we watched Rowdy Tellez slip on home plate. And Charlie Montoyo kind of indicated that it sounds like that hamstring might put Rowdy Tellez on the injured list. So as the Blue Jays get healthier with Rafael Dolis set to get activated tomorrow, I think they go to the ballpark still wondering how Rowdy's going to check out.
Do you have any idea how long Ryan Bruch will be on the IL?
I think it's going to be a long time.
You do?
I do. Yeah. You know why? Because as I was observing in Dunedin, when Ryan started to play catch, aired out a little bit, and he got to about 100, 120 feet, started to close the distance back with Matt Bushman, the guy that he was playing catch with, then he waved himself off to shut down play and catch. And everything that he pointed at in this conversation, as I was observing it, was directly at the elbow.
Yeah, that's not a good thing. Okay, let me give you a little scenario here, and I want you to finish it for me. If Rafael Devers in the seventh inning on Tuesday night is coming up with two outs, who is Charlie Montoyo handing the ball to, Travis Bergen or Tim Mazza?
So those are the two pitchers in the ninth inning.
No. I didn't say the seventh inning because the ninth inning is a whole different animal. Hopefully that's Rafael Dolis getting it in the ninth inning. Seventh inning, two outs. They want to go to a left-hander. Would it be Bergen or would it be Mazza?
Right now, I think you trust Travis Bergen. Tim Mesa's fastball command and that slider, he can't get around it right now.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of trust in what Travis Bergen in, especially where he's able to locate up in the zone. And spot his fastball, there's a lot of ability and a lot of trust where he's pitching it right now.
Yeah, I know Tim Mays have been talking a lot about coming off that Tommy John year, and some guys have some peaks and valleys to that. We see the velocity down on the sinker a little bit. We see the velocity down on the slider. Do you think it's more about him fighting through that mentally than it is anything mechanically or whatever else?
It's funny. You know, it's funny you bring that up because on Saturday – I watched Tim Mazza out doing a lot of flat ground work, and he was just not max effort going through the mechanics, but you could tell he was trying to find that release point and just mentally get himself through those individual steps as he's reaching back, getting on top of it, then extending, making sure that he's going all the way around to get that feel back. So I think that absolutely this is more of just a, hey, I have to get my mind right to make sure I trust getting these pitches. And then that you would hope that eventually then that translates to the success. But, you know, I think you're spot on when you mentioned kind of that mental roadblock, knowing that the guys a year plus after Tommy John surgery, now he's getting a good amount of work at the same time. He's going to have to fight through some things.
Ben, we talked a little bit at the top of the show about the Jays record against the National League East, 9-2 so far in interleague play, and how, you know, they've yet to play. I mean, they've had a pretty nasty schedule. They haven't had a lot of easy teams. They haven't run into yet, and that will be happening for them. We're almost at the quarter pole with this team. What has surprised you about them? What has disappointed you about them? I mean, clearly everybody's going to say, seeing George Springer. I mean, we've seen Robbins, you know, in our backyard more than we've seen George Springer. So I think for a lot of people, that would be the biggest disappointment so far. But what do you see as a surprise and disappointment?
A couple of things are surprising to me. How consistent Robbie Ray has been in the rotation outside the blip. And I know 6 walks are, you know, that's an ugly number, but that came in one start and he figured it out by the time that he took the ball the next time. Robbie Ray is a large reason that the Blue Jays have had success. Another thing that has surprised me is how quickly Bo Bichette has turned around his defense this season. Yeah. And you could see him pressing, him thinking about it, and ultimately not the same guy since his knee injury back in the 2020 season. And he said something to me around the batting cage on Friday that was really, really interesting. He goes, you know what? I was out there trying to impress everybody but myself. And that to me spoke volumes, where he plays with this chip on his shoulder. Like, he had been told he didn't have the range to play in the middle of the diamond. He'd never be a major league shortstop. And even Charlie Montoyo indicated the fact that when they traded Freddy Galvis, he was really concerned of what the defense would look like up the middle, bringing in this kid, Bo Bichette, who a lot of people had question marks about him defensively. And in pretty short order, he made Charlie and the coaching staff forget about Freddy Galvis. So, but you know, the belief in Bo is something, and the quick turnaround to get that done and cannot get everything ironed out. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he's working hard, and you can watch it at 2:30 in the afternoon every day in Dunedin. But those are a couple of the big, big reasons for me that this team is having success. And obviously the injuries are really disappointing. And just the multitude of them and the impact of them. David Phelps with the lat, the number of forearm and elbow issues that you're seeing. And now it seems like the injury of the day is, you know, oblique and groins and hamstrings. There's just so many and really important pieces on this. That is, if this season unravels, I think that's where it starts to unravel in the injured list.
Okay, if you were Charlie Montoyo and I read these stats to you, last 7 games, Danny Jansen is 4-for-18 with 9 strikeouts at the plate. Would you play Reese McGuire more?
Well, yeah, you're going to have to play a hot hand. You want somebody to get in there and outside handing Steven Matz and Hyunjin Ryu. I think the best matchup is the situation for the rest of the playing time.
Yeah. No, I think we're kind of moving towards that. It's kind of been the one long running offensive issue with this team, hasn't it? You know, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., Charlie mentioned this, Barker talked about it. I think Lourdes Gurriel Jr., we know enough about him now, Ben, that I think we can call him a slow starter, and you ride that until you start seeing Lourdes again. But the one nut they haven't been able to crack, and I guess it's okay if you got 8 other guys in the lineup hitting, but that catcher's position still, you know, it's still a bit of a hole for them.
It is, and the answer is still a couple of years away when it comes to somebody you expect to be a complete backstop, and that's with the bat and defensively and the ability to throw, and that's Gabby Moreno, you know, who's having a really nice start to the Double-A season. But I very early on in spring training, I still thought they were going to kick the tires and try to get in somebody on a more veteran presence, but with the number of guys that they were already carrying in a catching position on the 40-man roster, that never panned out. Now out of necessity, and you'll lose Alejandro Kirk for a significant amount of time, you're forced to bring Reese back up. Yeah. And this is it. You know, they are not going to make a trade to get somebody in here that's going to be an everyday catcher, or even go out and seek to find somebody that could cost them another 40-man spot. The Blue Jays are going to ride with Danny Jansen and Reese McGuire the rest of the way until Alejandro Kirk can get back into the lineup.
Yeah, and as I said, you can do that as long as these guys keep hitting. Ben, thank you as always for doing this.
Thanks, Ben.
My pleasure. Enjoy the week.
You too. That's Ben Wagner of Sportsnet.
Danny Jansen's a career 197 hitter, and I get that batting averages don't mean a ton in 2021, mm-hmm. but .197 is .197. And he's hitting 123, Jeff, this year. Like there's got to be one of those. Look, we've given. I understand the Ryu and him, and there's not a ton of people that can get on the same page with Ryu, and he has to catch him. But for me, you don't have to catch any other days than that. If you got a guy that's giving you halfway decent at bats, and you're not missing anything defensively behind the plate, the blocking, Reese McGuire's okay. Throwing, he's okay. Throwing's not as big a deal now. You know, unless you're, you know, late in the game and these guys are more worried about striking you out than controlling running games, then that you might need a stronger arm catcher behind the plate. But other than that, like occasionally you're going to have to figure out how to drive a ball into right center and make a little bit of an adjustment. And it just seems like Danny Jansen, and for whatever reason and whatever he's doing, I know he's working hard and he works harder than most people do. And you can't take that away from him. But I mean, 123 is 123.
Got to talk about Vladdy. We want to talk about Vladdy based on what we've seen from him over the last three games.
Well, you know, it's funny. He was mentioning all the injuries. The one guy that never gets hurt is the one guy that we talk about that's gained weight and lost weight. And he continues to play every single day.
As I said, he played every game last year, one of 10 guys in the majors to do it.
Yeah.
He's playing every game this year. One of your greatest strengths, if you want to be considered one of the game's elite players, one of the things you need to do is play every day.
That's it.
It sounds dumb.
No, it don't.
But it's true.
1,000%.
The woods are full of great players who can't answer the bell every day. If you want to be the elite of the elite of the elite, you play every day. Anyhow, we'll talk about Vladdy when we come back. It's Baseball Central. Jesus, Parker. No Blue Jays baseball tonight. Tomorrow night, the Lads will take on the Boston Red Sox in the first of three games. First time since 1990, according to our friend Chris Black, that the Blue Jays and Red Sox have met this late in the season, where one of the teams is in first place and the other's in second place. As we all predicted at the start of the year.
Yeah, well, I did say they were going 90 and 72.
No, I didn't say anything about the Red Sox. Say anything about the Red Sox.
Got the greatest manager in the history of baseball. The Red Sox do.
Vladdy be on a roll right now, Mr. Barker.
Mm-hmm.
And as we said before the break, Vladdy also plays every day. Every day, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Remember the guy playing first base? Could he handle it? Doing the splits all the time, all that.
I haven't seen him do a split.
He hasn't done the splits ever since people have started asking him about doing the splits. I think maybe he looked at it and thought, yeah, maybe I better not do it. But Bark, this guy plays every day. He's learned first base enough that we don't talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
And by the way, he's hit for the first time in his career. He's hit home runs in three consecutive games. Like this, he hits home runs and he plays every day. If you want to be a superstar in this game, those are the first two things you got to do.
Yeah, well, he's worked on his appearance. Obviously, losing all the weight, which is a big deal for him. That's obvious. It made him a better defender, made him a better base runner. You can't argue that it's helped him on the fastball end at the plate. You can see the electric bat speed is second to none in my mind. His timing's gotten a lot better with his fruition of his gather. Yeah, you laugh at me, but it's a fact that when he is not too early with that, because when he's early, he's rarely late with it. When he's too early with it, his hands tend to want to drag or fall down below the baseball, and then he plays catch up with his barrel, and his barrel, that's when he's starting to hit a bunch of ground balls, and he's a little out and around playing catch up. And he's confident. when you're confident and you add together all the things that I just mentioned, and, you know, it's one of those things. When's the last time that you were watching that bat with him and you walked away from that going, man, he should have hammered that pitch? It's rare that you see him get a hitter's pitch, something that he can hammer, and he's not hammering it somewhere.
These were his numbers. We mentioned he's got 11 home runs. He's homered in three straight games for the first time in his career. He's got 13 multi-hit games this year. He's reached base 74 times in the Jays' first 39 games this season. That's seventh most in Blue Jays history, by the way. Jose Bautista did it 77 times in 2014. He's tied for second in the majors behind only J.D. Martinez and getting on base 71 times. Among American League batters going into Sunday, he was second in OBP, fourth in walks, fourth in OPS, fifth in home runs, seventh in slugging, eighth in RBI, 10th in average, and 10th in total bases. That was going into yesterday's game. He is, and we asked you, and we asked folks at 590-590, you know, the text line, for their biggest surprises and disappointments this year. Nobody's mentioning Vladdy's defense as a surprise. If you were asking me, the stuff that we were talking about coming out of spring training that we're not talking about now, I would have said that Vladdy's defense at first base would still be a talking point. Maybe not an issue, but people would still be talking about it. And we started out early in the year. Remember, he's got to use the corners of the bags more. Some of the plays that he wasn't making. But I think maybe, and your point on this was really good, I think maybe the play where it kind of all came together for him was that instinctive move you talked about, the throw over to first base and then throwing the pickoff of Freddie Freeman.
Yeah.
And you talked about that. That's something you can work on, but at game speed, you've got to be thinking like a first baseman to make that work.
Yeah, you got to be comfortable with who you are as a defender around the bag and footwork, and you're not thinking about it, and you're not thinking about the play before it actually happens, which good ones do to a certain extent, but they really don't. This just comes second nature to him, and I think he's starting to have confidence, obviously, with his appearance. I will say the having more walks than strikeouts, being a 22-year-old hitter who is expected to carry a team, is the most impressive stat that he has. Because of the guy hitting in front of him who has the 61 extra base hits, and what is that? That's 11th most. What was that I saw? That's tied for the 11th most in a player's first 114 games in Major League Baseball history. Bo knows that, and so does Vladdy. And for Vladdy to go up and have the patience he has with the guy hitting in front of him that's gotten off to the kind of start that Bo Bichette's gotten off of, to you add all of that together, and he has enough patience to go up and basically take what the pitcher gives him, for me is a – I don't want to say it's graduation. It is next level times 50 that a guy can go up and actually have the at-bats he's having and pass the baton the way he does is some kind of special.
590-590 is a text line. A lot of people chatting about Marcus Semien and what you might do when George Springer comes back. And a couple of people, Bernie one of them, saying, whatever happened to the idea of hitting him in the ninth spot, which is something that people were talking about a little earlier.
He for me is not a guy that I want to think about getting on base. I want him to think about hitting and driving in runs,
right. Staying
in the big part of the field, hitting the three-run homer and doing it more than one or two times a week. I just think you would be wasting him in the nine hole. Kevin Biggio's the guy that keeps yelling and screaming now. Yeah. Now you know Kevin's talking about staying in the big part of the field, and he's trying to level out his swing more, which is, for me, that little thing he does to start his swing, that little fast thing he does with his hands in his barrel. He's getting a little bit better with the timing of that. It enables him to level out his swing and get the barrel in the hitting zone and keep it in the hitting zone a little bit longer. I just don't want to waste it. I just think he is not, I want to say, a leadoff hitter, the point of who's hitting around him. You just want people hitting around him and traffic on the bases. And how much traffic on the bases are you actually going to have when Danny Jansen's hitting in front of you?
As far as the surprise goes this year, a couple of folks have weighed in on 590, 590. And they want us to give a little bit of love here to Randall Grichuk
And I have and been all year.
We have been all year.
Yeah,
but,
all
but,
year.
But the point is, we did say, and I did say, that when George Springer was due back, there was a real good chance that Randall Gritcher could be the guy that would have to grab some pine. Now we just, I mean, he's one of the best hitters in baseball with runners in scoring position. It's something we talked about with the Blue Jays last year a great deal. Remember how they didn't seem to be able to come through with runners in scoring position?
Yeah.
He's hitting like over 400 against runners.
Well, the Rowdy Tellez injury will make this, right? If George Springer comes back sooner than later, will make it a little easier for them to work the outfielders in and out of the DH spot and keep Randall hot. And that's my point, is Randall seems to like hitting behind Teoscar. And if you can get what you want to get out of Randall Gritchie, confidence-wise, maybe you try and leave him behind him, however way that might be. You may not want to put Marcus Semien behind Teoscar, right? You either put Marcus Semien right behind George Springer and move everybody down a spot, or you're putting Marcus Semien behind Randall Gritchick to keep sort of everybody happy and, you know, everybody where they should be. And you're one of the guys is going to have to suffer. One of the guys is going to have to be a little bit better at plate discipline. And who do you think with the guys moving around can do that the best? That's what you have to ask yourself and not be chasing so much. Because, you know, Randall's streaky. Randall's the same plane swinger guy. See how much he misses the ball by. Whenever he's not doing so well. Like yesterday, he misses the ball by feet. That's because he's the same plane guy. When you throw it where he's swinging, he is going to hammer balls. When you don't, it's going to look a little bit of those valleys that he has occasionally. But look, he's confident now. He's driving in runs. That's what you want to do. And this is a good problem to have.
The pitching matchups for this series, these are not confirmed, but it's, you know, sort of our best guess. Hyunjin Ryu will go against Eduardo Rodriguez in the first game tomorrow. Wednesday will be Ross Stripling against Garrett Richards. And Thursday will be Nick Pivetta, the Canadian, against Steven Matz. And Nick Pivetta's had a phenomenal start to his Red Sox career, acquired from the Phillies at the trade deadline last year for a couple of relievers. He's 5-0 with a 3.16 ERA. Let's talk a little bit before we scoot here about Jordan Romano. And good thing, it's a good thing from my point of view that it looks like Rafael Dolis will be coming back.
Oh, you don't like him in
No. I have no problem with Jordan Romano, but I'm saying given his health history, given the way this year has gone, I'm just assuming that one of those two guys, quite frankly, is at some point probably going to get hurt.
Okay,
again.
I know what you want to say, so I'm going to say it for you. I think you're having a little head scratching on about their approaches late in games with these pitchers. That's what it is. Like they just don't seem to make sense.
Dolis not so much as
Dolis has been there and done it before
Romano.
And understands
Romano
what he needs to do to get guys out.
There's still stuff that happens with Romano that confuses me,
okay,
pitch selection.
Yeah, the one at bat, that the leadoff in the ninth inning up four runs, he's throwing a 3-1 slider and a 3-2 slider up four runs. That with Segura, that'll make you scratch your head a little bit until you go back and look that he throws his slider 52% of the time. He throws his fastball 46% of the time. He's a slider first guy for whatever reason that is, but it will make you scratch your head on the Danny Jansen thing and raising your hand a little bit and the coach is going, it's a 4-run lead, man.
Yeah.
And you just punched out the guy looking.
101
sinker.
Yeah.
You know, that's where, do you throw your best stuff or do you use a little common sense and think about which one can I throw for a strike?
See, what
we're up four runs.
I guess the difference between Romano and Dolis, from my point of view, is when Dolis goes away from what you think he should be doing, it's because you get the sense he doesn't have the feel for the pitch. Like if he doesn't have the feel for his sinker, you kind of look
slower
at it.
Slower, he's walking around the mound.
Exactly. You kind of go, okay, he's got to pull this one out of his ass to make it work.
Yeah.
Whereas with Jordan Romano, I almost get, there are outings where I come away from watching him pitch thinking, okay, either that was a really dumb selection of pitches or he's hurt. You know, very seldom do I come away. Again, when Dolis has a melt, Dolis has a meltdown, I kind of go, well, there you go.
On the flip side of that too, you can say if he's going to get beat, he's going to get beat with his best stuff. His best stuff, he thinks, is slider first. I got two different ones. I got to get me over one, and I got to put away one. I'm going to throw him a bunch. So maybe that's too. You know, you I think sometimes he's got to learn a little bit, though. If you're not feeling something with extension, that's what it looked like with the slider. He was just, for whatever reason, I am not between his ears. I have no idea why. Just looked to me with where the pitch was going. He was having trouble finishing it. That's where you may go, okay, now I may, because of the way I'm not finished something, I may need to throw my other pitch a little bit more. It is 100.
Yeah.
I don't even have to locate it a lot. Just get it somewhere close. And hopefully that's one of those things where you learn from it. You move on the next time you come out. And two, maybe he's not real good going back-to-back days. Back-to-back days, they may be careful trying to do that.
Mr. Barker, we will be back tomorrow. A big series against the Boston Red Sox.
Should be fun.
First place it will be.
We'll know where the Red Sox and the Blue Jays are at after that series.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely we will.